Well, good afternoon, dear colleagues, both in room and online. My name is Cabell McLaughlin. I'm Professor of International Dispute Resolution here and a Fellow of the Lauter Pacht Center. And it's really a huge pleasure for me to be able to welcome back to the Lauter Pacht Center, since they've both spent extensive times of research here in the past, this august team from the University of Oslo, Professor Mads Andenes KC and Professor Johan Leis. I've known Mads for many years. Mads, of course, has had a career which has spanned Europe, and including a major contribution to the development and understanding of international and European law in this country through his directorship at the British Institute. I met Mads when he was UN Special Rapporteur on Arbitrary Detention in Wellington, visiting New Zealand because the Australians wouldn't let him go somewhere else. We've had many engaging discussions on the topic of this afternoon's seminar in settings as various as Magdalen College, Oxford, and the Granta Pub in Cambridge. And I'm a great admirer also of the writings of Professor Johan Leis, much of whose scholarship has been devoted to the theme which we're going to discuss today. So I welcome them both to the Lauter Pacht Center and give them the floor to present on the systemic function of general principles. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here today, and Campbell, it would be a great honor to be chaired by you and the topic. Today for us is the systemic function of general principles, and to try to set the scene, the relevance of general principles, their systemic relevance is increasing. It's an often neglected source of law, which has an obvious increasing relevance. And one reason it is obvious, I expect, is the ILC, the National Law Commission's work on general principles of law. And in May 2025, you got the draft conclusions adopted by the drafting committee on their second reading. And we also have an updated draft commentaries to the draft conclusions. In parallel with the ILC, we have the development of general principles in the practice of the International Court of Justice. And to some extent, you can say that general principles are for courts to develop. It's not really for the ILC institutionally, perhaps not. And by ICJ has then, in its opinions in Chavez, these other decisions we have listed here, and most recently then in the climate change and obligations of Israel, it's especially climate change that we will look at today. And of course, principles in the climate change advisory opinion of last year, July last year, are many. As you see, I list them. Then we come down to systemic integration, lex specialis, others, principles of interpretation, and not the least, the court develops the interplay of general principles with custom and treaty. Two quotes. One is by Yusuf while he was president of North UK, which I think proves the the point, you know, the systemic relevance seen from the point of view of the international report. And he says general principles have proved effective in helping the court to address both structural problems of lawmaking in international society and to promote coherence. And I then turned to the triple systemic function of general principles, which I tried to formulate in this article to the QC, and it's the general principles of law as a central cohesive force, it's a tool for intra-systemic convergence and promoting inter-systemic coherence. And now, I think it's the only one to bring in full like this on our point, and that will be at the very end. But Johan will justify why it's not only excessive self-promotion to it. Oh, anyway, yeah, I left Johan to argue for that. And Benjamin points there, we support the general rapporteur, you know, the general rapporteur of Amulis in the ILC, his findings and their current draft conclusions, and in particular with regard to these four basic principles. Last conclusion, number three, two categories of general principles of law, as in international systems, and those that form within the international legal system, and general principles do not have a monopoly on certain systemic function, and all you see here, no natural hierarchy. Some principles may have a more direct systemic role, and this will inform our reflections in parts 2C and this presentation and our argument. Then, all general principles may have a systemic function as capitalist and contribute to internorm coherence. Several principles have a strong systemic function and contribute to systemic and norm coherence, such as principles for openness, coordination, functional closure, and principles of orientation. Outline. So I now done the introduction within 5 minutes. And then Johan has the first point here, another 5 minutes. And then, as you see, he goes on to intra-systemic and inter-systemic coherence. And I'm then going down to inter-norm, the more narrow context. And then I have some concluding reflections. And I think that leaves the floor. I should then leave the floor to you. And I hope you noticed the minutes. This is
in all. I've terrified them as to ensure that you have the maximum amount of time to make comments. But thank you so much, Mads, for that introduction. Johan.
So, yeah, first of all, also thank you very much for the kind invitation. And it's a great honor to be here. And of course, I have very fond memories of the Lauterbach Center, because I was here in 2015 as a visitor. Right. So I will now first talk about ILC's approach to the systemic function of general principles. And first I would like to talk about the reports of the special rapporteur, Marcelo Vasquez Bermudez. So he quite thoroughly discussed the systemic function of general principles and made the following points. So his first point is that all general principles contribute in some way to the coherence of the international legal system. And he argues that this is a natural consequence of their gap-filling function. So this is something we'll also address later a bit more in detail. So then he further argues that they may do so by establishing substantive rights and obligations, secondary rules, procedural rules, or interpretive rules, right? But in his view, also, there are certain principles who perform this systemic function in a more direct manner. And then he gives some examples, such as pacta sunt servanda, good faith, but also elementary considerations of humanity, right? Which is really a kind of substantive element. He also points out that, in fact, the systemic function can also be performed by the other sources. So this is something also we... Right, and then he had certain drafts, which I will not show you now, which then eventually led to the following draft conclusion 10 by the drafting committee. which is actually addressing the functions of general principles. And it reads, general principles of law may contribute to the coherence of the international legal systems. They serve inter alia as a basis for substantive rights and obligations, as well as for secondary and procedural rules, to interpret and complement other rules of international law. And they are mainly resorted to when other rules of international law do not address or resolve a particular issue. So the point is that actually states generally welcome this draft conclusion 10. Yeah. So for example, the Nordic countries supported this conclusion and said its relevance in terms of contributing to the coherence of the international legal system is kind of prevalent. Yeah, and there are several other countries who explicitly endorsed this conclusion. And only the US expressed certain skepticism towards a prior draft of this called Trump, before Trump. But it was also just kind of a slight skepticism because they only said we are not certain. If we look at reactions of other INC members, we can also see the vast majority actually supported this systemic function of general principles. So either explicitly or at least they didn't object. So there was a clear support. Only some objected but or did not object but had certain reservations. Yeah. So again, underlining that general principles do not have a monopoly in performing such a systemic functions. It's not the only function of general principles. Some questions whether it's eventually necessary to talk at all about the function of general principles. This is also something that discussed in the context of the work on customary international law, where there's no explicit discussion of actually the functions of customary rules, right? And then some pointed to the apparent contradiction between the gap-filling function as a systemic function and non-hierarchical relationship between resources. But of course, there were also some critical voices. So for example, CC argued that, and I quote, ensuring the coherence of the international legal system as a specific function of general principles of law went far beyond their functions. Yeah, so he says one should rather look at their systemic function in terms of internorm relationships. And this is the reason actually why we put up the extensive quote of Ludwig and Matt's article in the beginning, that actually Fortou raised some objections, not generally against the systemic functions, but against the inclusion of a reference to the statement that we showed in the beginning. Yeah. So he actually said he doesn't want to have it in the...
acceptable.
Yeah. But actually, yeah, there were many members who supported then retaining the reference. Yeah. So let's hope that it will stay like this.
If not, you know why.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So just in a nutshell... to conclude this part, so we see that there was a clear support of the large majority of states and IEC members of the systemic function, but there was relatively little engagement with its substance, right? And especially not in relation to those general principles that are formed within the national legal system. So this is something which was quite different in the VCIT context, where, of course, we have all the discussions on Article 31, 3, C of the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, and even more so in the context of the fragmentation report, where, of course, the question of coherence was at its core. And we can see, if we look at the work of the IEC now on subsidiary means, that there's also kind of reluctance of, and even more than in this context, of certain IEC members to accept, even to include discussions of, or a specific provision or draft conclusion on the systemic relevance of subsidiary means. Yeah. So Special Rapporteur Charles Jallo, he fought heavily for actually including a conclusion on the systemic relevance of especially judicial decisions as subsidiary means, but it didn't find its way so far in the draft conclusions. Okay. So now I would like to unpack in this part actually how do then general principles contribute to the coherence of international law and in this first part to the intersystemic coherence. So our perspective kind of builds on this observation of Robert Kort, yeah, who says, and I quote, from the logical point of view, there are some general principles that must be supposed to conceive a legal order. End of quote. So I think this is a basic premise that we would agree with. And then we have a certain theoretical framework, which I unfortunately cannot discuss in very much detail. But our basic perspective is that international law's kind of structured design is characterized by a complex and dynamic interplay between various legal orders and suborders, including national legal orders, through principles of openness, coordination, and conditional closure. Yeah, so this perspective kind of refutes this false dichotomy between extreme monism or extreme dualism on the other side, or extreme pluralism or fragmentation or constitutionalism. Yeah, so it does not necessarily challenge the plurality of Bund norms or rules of recognition as validating norms. So this is something we are not concerned with, but we generally see the kind of systemic reality of international law as one of certain dynamics, which are very much shaped by these principles. And I will now in the following unpack what these principles are and what their basis actually is. Yeah, if you're interested in this theoretical approach, I can refer you to an article that I've written with Andreas Paulus, where we explain this a bit more in detail. So coming to the first very important principle of openness, which in our view characterizes all legal orders applying international law, being national or international. So what is the basis of this principle? First, we find hinge mechanisms, hinges as some kind of door openers, in international law, which make general international law applicable across international sub-jurisdictions. Yeah, and they can be found in constituent documents of courts of these sub-jurisdictions. Yeah, so one can, for example, point to Article 21 of the Rome Statute or certain articles in UNCLOS, which actually refer back to general international law. So this means we have a common normative layer of international law that penetrates the different orders, even if it does so on the terms of the individual legal order. Yeah, and then, of course, international law remains dispositive. So there can be then lex specialis kind of deviations from this general framework of general international law be applied. Yeah, with, of course, the exception of jus cogens and Article 103. And we find similar hinge mechanisms, open mechanisms, in national legal systems, which make international law applicable in domestic law. Yeah, so good example, as you probably have realized, I'm German. Yeah, and point to the German basic law, which has several provisions opening the German legal order towards international law and establishing the openness and friendliness towards international law. Yeah, we find similar explicit provisions in the Italian constitution, but we actually have identified, and I think one can fairly say this is probably true to all legal systems, they in one way or the other open up towards international law. But from our perspective, this does not necessarily challenge the formal division of international law and domestic law, right? But it's a simple dynamic of opening. Then we have Article 38, first paragraph, ICJ status, in itself as an introduction. Yeah? So Article 38, ICJ statute, in our view, provides a gateway between different legal orders, national and international law, international. This applies to all three sources, so one can also make a similar claim with regard to custom, but it applies especially to general principles, where we have, in fact, an intersystemic communicative process, right? So it's a bit like a paternoster, where they would enter at a certain floor and then leave the paternoster. Probably they look a bit different, but, at another level. So you can see international general principles are taken up, elevated to the international level, then from specific sub-jurisdiction of international law, they are kind of transferred to the level of general international law and so on. And this is a dynamic that is a continuous process of communicative interaction.
An paternoster lift is a lift without doors, basically.
Yeah, where you could just jump in and leave. Right. And I think I will not talk too much about it because I'm sure you are familiar with the principle of systemic integration, which is, of course, a very important niche mechanism which we have the experts sitting here. So I will just mention that it, of course, has a positive legal basis in Article 31.3c, the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaty, and has been confirmed in numerous cases, especially by the Court of Human Rights, but also other courts. Yeah, we find, of course, a similar principle of harmonious interpretation in all national legal systems. Yeah, and this is, of course, also complemented often by informal judicial dialogue, a sociological phenomenon which we cannot discuss in detail now. Then we would also highlight that Article 38.1d of the ICJ statute embodies a principle of systemic institutional integration as a corollary to actually the principle of substantive systemic integration that I have discussed before. Yeah, so this is something Mats and I have written a bit more about in an article. And it basically refers to the legal basis for judicial cross-fertilization and cross-referencing, which is, of course, materializing across jurisdiction where courts refer to each other. A good example or case in point is the climate advisory opinion of the ICJ referring extensively to the ITLOS climate advisory. Right. Very quickly, we also have certain general principles of coordination, yeah, such as lex specialis and lex posterior, which can also have an application across jurisdictional boundaries. In their institutional dimension, these pendants and res judicata are principles that are probably identifiable, but I'm a little skeptical whether we could say they have reached already a level of being a general principle. One should also mention principle of coordination in relation to a hierarchy, where we have Article 103 of the UN Charter and Jus Cogens norms that are also principles, some of them at least, which of course also coordinate different jurisdictions. Oh, sorry, the relationship can potentially coordinate the relationship between different jurisdictions and their norms. But in reality, of course, conflict avoidance generally prevails, as we can see in the practice of the Court of Human Rights. So finally, before I give the word to Mats again, as I pointed out in the beginning, this opening of legal orders is not unconditional. So we can also identify general principles of conditional closure of legal orders. Yeah, so it's a kind of dynamic relationship between the opening and the closure. Ones that one can certainly identify are principles of disengagement. So for example, treaty revocation, invalidation, and termination or suspension of treaties, where actually legal orders can close their doors to other legal orders. Under narrow circumstances though, but yeah, Brexit is a case in point where this happened. When it comes to customary international law, it's even more exceptional or the circumstance under which one legal order can close its door, so to say, is even more narrow. Something that I cannot discuss in detail now. One could also discuss whether there are certain principles which are some kind of counter limits closing legal orders. Yeah, for example, the identity test applied in European human rights law by some courts, or the equivalent protection test that we know from the European Court of Human Rights applied in Bosphorus and the German Constitutional Court applied in Solange. Our point would be that these have not yet crystallized into general principles, and they're also often quite strong differences between their concrete character. But one could, of course, consider whether they have crystallized as regionals or special principles. Yeah? Okay, with this, then I will give the floor back to Mats, and I hope I stayed with my time.
More or less, huh? Let's just fire something. And of course, not to be too stuck in the images here, but hinges, door hinges. If you don't have hinges, it's very difficult to open the door. And if you open the door without hinges, it's even worse to get it shut again. Now, we are basically for hinges to open, not to shut, but it can have both functions. Now, I have four slides on the second systemic function. So Johan spoke about intra and intersystemic coherence, if you like it, a kind of macro level, and I'm moving down. at the more micro level, but it's not really opposite to say micro and the macro here. But you see that I'm moving down to the norm level. And 4 points here, general principles complete the set of existing norms in case of a gap. General principles help to interpret norms, and general principles avoid inconsistency between different norms and coordinate norms in the nearby normative context. And then, of course, what I'm going to talk about, that's concerning the nearby norm context. So the first slide on this general principles as gap fillers, and the special rapporteur talks about the systemic function of general principles is a natural consequence of a gap filling function, and to avoid non-liquid, which has, of course, been very important to the previous case law, Court of Justice as a restriction. And well, this is a legal situation where you have a legal question that cannot be solved by treaties and custom, and potentially all principles can fill this function. Now, other sources may also fill gaps, but general principles are more relevant, often with a higher level of abstraction. And my second slide here on gap fillers, general principles fulfill this function in two ways. A more concrete principle is deduced from an already well-established and more abstract general principle at a high level. And now you could, of course, say that if you have a situation where this could apply in a situation where you have no principle determined yet, but then it is recognized under Article 38.1c or the ICJ statute. And then move on to here slide. And this is gap, technically speaking, misleading, and you could say that the principle already exists and require no more than its identification and application to the facts. This is kind of internal legal categorization question, isn't it? But of course, you have in the end cognitive dimension of every identification and application of all principle. So perhaps it is not so inaccurate a term, this gap or gap filler. And then we have the example of gap filling in climate change. The court deduces concrete principles from well-established and more abstract no harm principle. They modify it. So it's not confined to direct cross-border harm. And then due diligence. As you see, we have a bit long, too long cited to quote. And then they do this all under the section of customary international law. So here are the principles inform the development of custom. And then we are to my last slide on this, gap filling. And international law then is more than a fragmented, piecemeal aggregation of individual norms. It's backed up by a normative layer of abstract principles that can be used to answer every legal question that arises. Even Vishnu Creed will say, I'm an original challenge bit. Next topic then for me is general principles as interpretative guidelines. And here you see corridor, which could be from anywhere, couldn't it? The idea then was... you can talk about half an hour for lateral, it's better solid. But of course, you have several general principles which provide interpretive guidelines to deal with the relative indeterminacy of international norms. And then, of course, providing traditional legal to determine the outcomes, excluding extra legal arguments or putting them into a context which is legal and suitable for a legal discourse and legal determination. But it's clear that this is a question of norms of interpretation, which could emanate from all three sources, you know, from treaty and a convention, custom, and from principle. But if you are talking about principles of interpretation, the way they are expressed, for instance, in Berne Convention, of course, that's about principles which have been developed over a long time and then codified in the convention. And that goes also for much of what you have in custom in terms of interpretive guidelines or interpretive rules. It owes a lot to broader general principles. And then you get the traffic, you know. You have a statutory expression of a general interpretive principle. Then that, of course, plays back to the general principles up there of more generality. And then I think I have the last 3 minutes.
Sure.
To keep with it, our agree frame. Well, you have several general principles that specifically aim at the harmonization, coordination of international legal norms and the avoidance of normative conflict. I mean, by the normative context, we have Article 31.3c, of course, Campbell's, I think, main contribution at the beginning of this century was on that. And has formed the discourse ever since. But also in the narrow normative context, the general principle of a contextual interpretation as reflected in Article 31.1, you know. Purpose and context. Context is everywhere in the interpretation. Narrow context, 31.1, 2, and broader, wider normative context, 31. And general principles as internorm coordinators. That's one way of looking at lex specialis and lex posterior, including reflections. All general principles have a systemic function as gap fillers and contribute to internormal coherence. Several general principles have a strong systemic function and contribute to intersystemic and inter-norm coherence. And I mentioned some examples. And that takes me to the last slide, which I'll then go 1 minute five and read that out. And the point of this is, of course, what is the main point? It's what's involved. Reasoning by reference to principles is itself system constitutive. But Campbell writes here, general principles perform a very similar function to reasoning by reference to principles in any legal system, guiding the application of legal rules when the latter are uncertain or in conflict either with each other or with the fundamental premises of the legal system as a whole. Reasoning by reference to principles is itself system constitutive, helping to secure the coherence of the system because it is coherence and not the unitary absolute consistency that is the basic requirement of the law. And that, I think, is my last slide. And thank you for your attention.